Good afternoon, church. So, what commandment are we on today? Shall not steal. And that is number 8. Okay, let me just open this up in a word of prayer. So, Heavenly Father, we just desire to hear your heart today. Would you speak to us? We know that you have been preparing our hearts. And Jesus, we trust that the things that are from you will be spoken, and we ask that the things that are not from you would fall away. We pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. So, what is the shortest verse in the Bible? You guys, Jesus wept, or Jesus weeps, right? So that comes from John 11:35. But here in the Ten Commandments out of Exodus 20, we come to a number of also very short verses. And so I contemplated, do I have you guys stand up, sit down, like do a bunch of squats because it's so short? But I will save you the effort. Let's get Exodus 20:15 on here. 4 words. You shall not steal. Done. So there's a few 4 words in here. And it's actually 4 words in NIV, NASB, King James, New Living Translation. So there's no way around it. I thought maybe there was a do not steal, but I couldn't find it. So as I said, number 8 out of 10. And here we are at the 8th commandment, smack in the middle of the set of commandments that have to deal with our relationship with others. So as our brother Kelvin a few weeks ago so eloquently summarized, you can kind of think of the Ten Commandments in sort of a conceptual framework. So the first 4 have to do with the vertical. So vertical meaning our relationship with God. And so those first 4 are no other gods before me. You should not make yourself an image and worship it. Don't misuse the name of God, and remembering the Sabbath. So those 4 are the vertical commandments. And then as we enter number 5, we start on the what we consider the horizontal commandments, right? So what we've covered so far is honor your father and mother. What did we have the 2 weeks before that? Pastor Elliot was? Murder. Do not murder. And Pastor Ted was? Not commit adultery. And so that's right. And so today we come to the 8th one in these horizontal commandments. So those that deal with, again, our relationship with others. And I think as we've been studying this, although that's a really great conceptual framework, and I like that because it helps me remember those commandments, because to be honest, when we were first quizzed on that first day, I don't think I got all 10. And so this is a nice way to remember it. But I think as we have discovered, as we unpack these commandments more and more, is that they're not always really clear-cut, vertical or horizontal, because how we relate to God often influences how we interact with others, right? So the vertical absolutely influences the horizontal. And I would also say that how we regard others is closely intertwined and interlinked with how we view God. And so actually, it's a more like, I think as Pastor Ted mentioned in his first, really maybe the analogy is more like pearls in a necklace, that they are all intertwined and the breaking of one really breaks the whole chain. And so as we see, the Ten Commandments are far more complex and far more deep than really meets the eye. And so now we come into this 8th one, you shall not steal. So let me ask you this, church, have you ever, maybe a show of hands, had anything stolen before? So quite a majority, or maybe I would say over half of folks. I have not personally had that terrible experience, but from what I understand in talking to people who have experienced that, been a victim of theft, is that it is quite a violation, not only of your personal property, but really something intrinsic in your personhood that is robbed, where you just feel like, my goodness, something of me, and it's not necessarily equates with the value of that thing that was stolen, but something very deep inside was taken. You know, this is not even really a stealing, but I just thought, let's throw in some personal examples here. you know, I think some one type of stealing could be when someone takes credit for your work. You know, that's an example of stealing. And so one thing that I, the only thing that I can think of that was kind of near to me was, so last week, or was it the week before, 2 weeks ago, our family was gone. We were away. And that week, so, you know, I work in a hospital setting, in a clinic. And, you know, I recently helped to open this new clinic in downtown for folks that are exiting homelessness. And so it was a big thing, right? This is kind of a big deal. And we were so busy taking care of opening stuff that opening the clinic that we realized we probably should have some sort of open house or celebration. And so 6 months after we actually opened our clinic doors, we finally breathed our head out of the water and decided we would have an open house. And the problem is that we decided to have this open house on a day when I, so I'm one of the directors who helped open it, and my colleague, who's the manager, we were both going to be out of town. but we held this open house on a day when one of the city supervisors could come in, Cindy Chavez, who's one of the districts, whose district that was in. And so we had this huge open house, and a bunch of media folks came in, and there was on there. So we had to like put people up in the front that could like speak to, you know, like say, oh, we did this and we did that. And so we had another stand-in doctor play that role for me. And, you know, this was totally pre-planned. You know, we said this guy is going to do it. He's one of the guys who works there. And so, you know, ABC7 comes live, you know, my friend Hui's name is on there and he's like medical director, you know, Hope Clinic. And, you know, and so he's talking about all the stuff. And while this was totally planned and we did this, it felt a little funny for me to watch that because I felt like, wait a minute, that's what I did. I did that work and we did that, you know. It, and so by no means was this a stealing because this was something that was intended, but it felt funny. And so as we think about this eighth commandment, I think I've come to realize that there's something about us in humankind where we have this sense that stealing is wrong, as we talked about. But there's something implicit in the eighth commandment, which is contrary to what I would normally think of, is really implicit that there is a God-given right to personal property. That sounds weird, right? You know, I think we think sometimes that the Christian utopia, or maybe the Christian way to live, is really that we sell our possessions, live as paupers, and, you know, share everything in common. And, you know, Acts 4 sometimes might suggest this, you know, so that is the... that is the passage where it talks about, you know, and this is in the book of Acts, so in the early church, where the believers shared everything in common. You know, and so the Bible talks about, I'm just going to kind of read it here. All the believers were in one heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. And God's grace was so powerfully at work in them all that there were no needy persons among them. From time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone who had need. And so we look at this and we say, that is what we're supposed to be like as the church. But, you know, what's interesting is that I think this, you know, so my question then is communism, is that how we're supposed to live our lives? Is that really the Christian ideal? But I think for those who have maybe been close to communism in one form or the other, remember, maybe our families fled from communism or maybe our extended families fled from communism, we know that that is not what God intended. I think the big difference is that communism is involuntary, and what God is asking us to do is a voluntary generosity, right? And the other thing that I would notice in the book of Acts is that... it also talks about in those early days that many of the believers met in their homes and broke bread together, implying that they actually didn't give up their personal property. They actually had their own homes and still met at them, but yet gave up as they saw need. And so, again, I think this is quite a puzzle, but really owning things, p- possessing things, that is part of who God created us to be. You can even look at the book of Genesis. When we were created, God gave dominion to man, to Adam and Eve, to basically have dominion over the animals, to use the plants as food. And so there's this sense that we have ownership and dominionship, you know, over the land around us. And so the question that I really want to pose today is, if we're supposed to possess things, if we're supposed to own things, what does that mean for my life today? What does it mean that I'm not supposed to steal? And how does kind of God's view of that affect my life today? So there's different types of stealing, and I think we were mentioning a few of them. One is stealing against individuals, and I think that's what we're most familiar with. So there's, you know, I think, unfortunately, the Bay Area has had our share of property break-ins. So we're hearing more and more of that over the recent months to years. Car break-ins, very, very common. So please don't leave your valuables in the car. Identity theft, you know, that's a very common thing that's happening in our technological age here and there. And theft, you know, happens, and the idea of personal property being violated happens regardless of socioeconomic status. And so, you know, I've talked with folks who live in tents as homes, and they also experience theft. So when folks steal from them, although they have very little, if people invade their campsite and take something, they feel a violation of property. So it really, the sense of violation of that happens regardless whether you are rich or poor. There is stealing against institutions. So there's always the question, is it okay to use the corporate copier? You know, so a lot of us may work for a big company. So if I make a copy here or there, one or two, maybe that's okay. But if I do all my 200 Christmas cards on there, probably not, right? I mean, I think there's a sense that we have, it's like, that many is not okay, but is one or two okay? So then does our stealing become, you know, our mandate against stealing, is that a relative commandment, or is it an absolute one? And so those kinds of questions come up. Douglas and I were just having a conversation the other day, like shredding, you know, like, is it okay to put one or two items in the shredder? But it's probably not okay to put like my entire binder, you know, in the shredder, right? In the corporate shredder. So, you know, there is stealing against institutions. There's also stealing, as I had mentioned before, of credit for something you didn't do. So stealing someone's reputation. I think some folks may have had that, and that's a very uncomfortable experience when someone takes credit for what you have done. And unfortunately, that probably happens more than we would like. There's stealing of intellectual property. So that's a big one in Silicon Valley, right? So this week I was happened to be at Facebook, and I was sitting in the lobby, and I needed to use the restroom. So I go to the front desk, and I'm like, excuse me, but I need to use the restroom. And so they said, okay, well, you'll need an escort for that. And I was like, oh, okay. I thought I had outgrown that, but all right. Sure, take me to the restroom. You know, and you know, really, what is that, right? It's because I'm a visitor. I'm not a Facebook employee. And, you know, and just to even get into lobby, I had to sign all these waivers that I wouldn't do this and that kind of stuff. But you know, they're worried about intellectual property. I mean, they're worried that I'm going to like take pictures of their engineers who were basically just eating snacks at their corporate kitchen while I went to the bathroom. But that's a huge deal here in Silicon Valley. And then there's stealing. You know, I think that we have recognized now more because we have an international trade market that we steal on a global level. And so, you know, that our personal purchases have you know, far-flung consequences. And so we see that in the rise of stuff like that's called fair trade chocolate or fair trade coffee, or, you know, or the concepts of, you know, let's not buy fast fashion, you know, with the idea that, you know, your purchase of a cheap fashion material might be enabling sweatshops, you know, across the world. So, you know, that concept has really come to the forefront in recent years. So the idea that as a, you know, economy, that as the U.S., we could be stealing from another economy or stealing from our environment. And then finally, the one that is hardest to stomach, but I really felt compelled to talk about today is really the idea of stealing against God or stealing from God. the book of Malachi, which is the final book of the Old Testament, at Malachi 3, there he introduces this concept. This concept is introduced of robbing God. And so there's an idea that perhaps that we, as followers of Christ, at the time Christ, of course, had not come, but followers would or could rob God, and that we do rob God. And so kind of where I want to go is I really want us to come away with a biblical understanding of the concept of personal property, kind of in the framework of stealing. How is it that we are to view our possessions as the Bible would have us view them? And in the Bible, actually, this concept one could call stewardship. And so I think those who have maybe been in Christian circles may have heard this, but the definition of stewardship in the Oxford Dictionary is the job of supervising or taking care of something, such as an organization or property. The principle of stewardship, as it's thought about in the Bible, or the ownership of personal property, comes with a couple of principles. So the first principle is that our possessions are finite in time. So in Job 121, there is a famous kind of quote, "Naked I come from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart." So there's really the concept of when we're born, you know, we are born a little baby with no possessions. And while we may amass possessions throughout our lifetime, that at the end, when we go to die, we cannot take our possessions with us into our next life. And so there's really that biblical concept that possessions come, you know, we basically begin the same way that we left, which is with nothing. And then there's the biblical concept. So that's the first one, as time, so finite time. The second principle around stewardship is about ownership, ultimate ownership. So Psalm 24:1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it." So this idea, right, that everything in the world belongs to God. And I think that we know that in our heads, you know, that everything does belong to God. But I have a hunch and suspicion, because I don't do it, that I often don't live with that premise in mind. So I have a personal example. So we have some toys in our house. I have three kids. And so, you know, so we have a dirty little secret is... The dirty secret is that actually Douglas and I own all the toys, right? Because it's our house. But it's a secret that I think the kids don't really know. And so, like it or not, we didn't intend this, but we ended up doing a social experiment, which has kind of backfired on us. But when we moved houses, we moved to a different house, our original intention was that we would shack the kids, one or two of them, in the same room, and we would kind of put all their toys in this other room that we had, which would kind of be like the spare room, or just basically like put all our junk in this one room. But then when kind of this, and I've mentioned this before, but when the sleep started going crazy and awry, we decided to just put them each in their own room. But the problem was that the littlest one, who had the least amount of stuff, we just put all, like, the majority of toys in his room. And when we moved in, you know, it was fine. He was about, was it 18 months? So at 18 months, like, you know, that's kind of a pleasant sort of age. Not really. But, but you know, so we, you know, people, they would just all go in his room and play stuff. But then as he's older and he's now three, he now thinks that every single toy, because it's the room that he sleeps in, is his. And I can just tell you that that just does not go well with the other two, because they remember when they got that particular toy or gift or stuffed animal or whatever, and they remember who gave it to them and when they got it and who it was intended for. And you can imagine fights breaking out in our house. You know, "That's mine. No, it's not. No, it's mine. No, it is. I remember it was mine." And so, you know, how do I solve this? I don't know. You guys might have seen how I solve it. I just take the toy away. If you guys can't figure out a way to play it, it is gone. And so, you know, I like confiscate like so much stuff like you wouldn't believe, because really they have too much stuff. So it's actually in their betterment that I just confiscate like over half of it, because who needs that much stuff anyways? But Right. Like, and I think like sometimes, and so like, you know, they're fighting mine, yours. And we're like, you know whose it is? And they're like, who? And we're like, ours, you know? And so you can just see the shock on their face. They're like, they just don't get it. But really, you know, it's ours. You know, and so I think, you know, this example is similar to kind of how we operate in God's kingdom, right? You know, here we are, like, I made this money. No, you didn't. I did. Oh, whatever. I own this. This is my property, whatever. It's God's. And he can confiscate it anytime he wants or do anything he wants with it. You know, and so I think the fundamental question I have today is for you all, is do we view our personal property in light of this concept that everything belongs to God? And do we think and act in accordance with this understanding that all that we have, money, finances, talent, time, and otherwise belong to God? And are we conducting our lives as such? So I have some a personal story about my own family, another personal story here. So my family, maybe similar to some that have had nearer immigrant backgrounds. I mean, I think most people in this country have had some sort of immigrant story, whether it be further or nearer from your personal history. But my family followed perhaps what was the typical American dream. You know, my parents came fleeing communism in China and everything that was happening there, and pretty much came empty-handed. You know, they were able to come, you know, actually probably better off than most in that they were able to come through the auspices of education. But, you know, that was kind of what they had was their education. And after that, they had to go out and then make a living. And so because of that personal story of my parents, you know, we were always taught the value of money, as I suspect many of your families may have done. You know, they always reminded us, you know, how hard they had to work to be able to make a life, you know, in the family. And there's always this story, you know, where my mom, who, my kids love McDonald's, and so I'm sure this is probably why we all love McDonald's, but is, you know, we had enough in our budget to go to McDonald's, like, I think it was either once a week or once every other week. And it was like this huge thing for us to be able to go to McDonald's. And so what we would get, I think we would get like one fry and one apple pie. And that was like our treat, you know, and we loved it. And we would just, you know, just go crazy over that. And, you know, and so, you know, and my parents would always remind us to remember, you know, how valuable that fry and apple pie were, you know, in our early days. And, you know, really instilled the value of frugality. And, you know, as they progressed further along in their time in the U.S., you know, they were able to secure more money, became more secure. And yet they still were maintaining much of those kind of cost-cutting measures in our household. And so, you know, the joke was that even though they became pretty well off later in my life, people asked me, there's this joke that runs in our family, like, oh, are you rich or poor? And I said, no, we're poor because we cut coupons. You know, and so because I always remembered, you know, whenever the Sunday paper came, and this is totally dating me, but we would go and cut all the Sunday coupons, you know, exactly. So, I mean, it's still kind of in many of our frameworks, and none of this is bad, but, you know, I think, you know, just really, I'm trying to kind of highlight, you know, that I think many of us, perhaps by the influence of our parents, were instilled a set of values around money and frugality, and the role that they played to give us all potentially, you know, or maybe not, maybe you're the first generation and you're doing it, but you're instilling that in your family, the value of hard work and what that means, and how you need to sort of be careful with money. And while it's good to be careful with money, and by no means am I saying that we should go and spend wildly, I have a sense that there are some intrinsic assumptions that get built in as that happens. And so one of these intrinsic assumptions is that, you know, the idea is that the money that we have or the resources that we have come directly because of our work that we've put in. And while that is true, I mean, you know, generally people that work hard are able to reap the benefits of that, it leaves out the knowledge or the recognition that God had a great role in that. And again, not playing, downplaying the role of hard work, but I think in that sort of narrative of kind of the American dream, we leave out the hand of God, right? And I think also intrinsic in many of our cultures or families of these types of behaviors is that the highest use and byproduct of the fruit of our work is that, you know, the highest use of our lifetime efforts, intellect, and talent is that we save the money so at the end of our years, we can be comfortable in our retirement. And again, I am not saying that you should not save for retirement, because if you can, you should. But what I'm saying is that is really often seen as the highest value or the highest goal of, you know, the purpose of our making money, that and using that money to then help the next generation, whether it be our direct lineage or our extended family lineage. And I can say that for my own personal family, that that is really the goal is, you know, we're saving, and my parents are still saving very much until they end. I'm like, it's your retirement, just use the money, you know, but they are saving to really try to help the next generation. And again, that's not bad. However, again, I think that really God's kingdom and God's ownership is a lot of times left out of that way of thinking and that framework of thinking. You know, and, you know, a lot of us will go to financial analysts, and again, not a bad thing, but, you know, we are so trained to really be future-oriented in our investments or the way we use our money that I think that many of us here really forget whose resources and time and money this all is. And so let me transition us to read Matthew 25, verses 14 through 29. I'm going to have you guys stand up for this one because it's a little bit longer. So let's go ahead and read this together. 2, 3. Again, be like. And share your master's happiness. Interest. So take the bag of gold from him, give to the one who has 10 bags. Whoever has will be given more, have an abundance. If it does not have, they have. You may be seated. I don't know about you, but this passage for me is chilling. It's absolutely chilling. The context in which this is written or explained is that it's some of the final parables that Jesus tells in the moments before the beginning of him, in the events that lead to his going to the cross. So these are some of his last parables that we hear about. And it's clear in this passage that it's about stewardship. You know, here there's a master and a servant. Master goes on a journey for an unspecified time period. And as you just read, one's given 10 bags, one's given 2 bags, and one is given 1 bag. The two who have 10 go off to make, 5 bags of gold, 2 and 1. The 5 goes off to make 10. The 2 goes off to make 4. And the last one buries the gold in the ground. And then at the time of accounting, because the master was gone for a very long time, you know, the master commends the first two for the multiplication of their investment. But the last one who did not multiply his investment, though preserved the capital, was actually thrown into an outside world of torment. You know, and so reading this, this is chilling because you know, it speaks to me personally, because I feel like, myself included, that many of us have been given the 5 bags. You know, I see us here in the United States and Silicon Valley especially, that we have been given a disproportionate amount and the higher share of money, of resources, of talent. You know, I mean, Silicon Valley has some of the most talented people in the entire world. People come from all over the world because of their talent to be here. And some of us may not think that we have a lot of resources or money or skills, and that may or may not be true, but make no mistake, in this passage, God takes account of those people too. And in fact, you know, and just thinking about the guy who just got one, he was probably thinking, ah, you know, that master's not going to make, I just got one, you know, those guys have 5 and 2. So like, I'm just going to go bury mine because I'm afraid that I might lose it because I have so little. I mean, that's probably how I would be thinking. But the master calls him into account just as he did the other two. And ultimately, he was the one that was thrown out. I'm just going to flash up here also Luke 12, 16 through 21. This is another famous parable. And this is one where there's a certain rich man who had a great harvest. And he basically had such a huge harvest that his barns could not contain his harvest. And so he said, I'm going to tear down my barns and I'm going to build a bigger one. And he said to myself, I have plenty of grain saved up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. And what happens to him? God says, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God. Very chilling passages. And I did not want to give these kind of fire and brimstone type words to you guys, but I felt compelled, you know, as I was preparing for this, you know, as I was preparing about this stealing, about thinking about stealing, because I would venture to say that I think probably, and I don't want to assume, but most of us probably are pretty good about not stealing from others. I just have a hunch, just from knowing you guys, that you guys, for the majority, lead pretty upright lives and generally doubt that you have been stealing. But I could not help but feel the compulsion from God that to share that perhaps some of us, myself included, that we might be stealing from God. I haven't had the opportunity to share with you guys all, but you know, recently I've been in the process of contemplating and birthing to start with some good friends, a Christian clinic, a nonprofit with some very good friends of mine. I'm not about to go into full detail here about kind of the ups and downs, but I have to say that I recently have been on a roller coaster ride of just wrestling with what this means with my life, what that means for my family's life, and everything. I've thought about our future. It's a lot to wrestle with. And so what I just have to say today is, church, you know, at the end of our lives, we all must stand accountable before God. And none of us can stand before you. You know, Douglas and I don't stand, you know, as a mediator. We all will have our time before our Maker. And it's really poignant to me that these are some of the last parables that Jesus speaks of before he goes to the cross. And to me, that means that they are profoundly significant. How we view this principle of stewardship and our possessions and our resources and our time and our talents, I believe has eternal significance. You know, I'm not here to say, you know, what that really means, but I have to say that this is of critical importance to God. And I really just want to ask you guys today to really wrestle before God and ask ourselves, perhaps it's individually, perhaps it's corporately, perhaps it's at a society, but are we stealing from God? You know, and a lot of times we don't necessarily think that way because the sort of consequences of that to us are not in our face. But are we using our financial resources that we've been given? And if we don't have financial resources, are we making use of the time we have been given? Because we all have been given 24 hours in one day. Have we been using the intellect that we have been given? Or the skills that we have been given? Or relationships that he has put before us to invest in his kingdom? You know, are we putting it off? You know, again, I don't have a really nice way to kind of put this all, but really what I want us to do is really to come before God and know that his way is gentle and his way is always gracious, not condemning. And I apologize if I've come off condemning, but I have been having some very hard looks at myself this week. And ask for his convicting spirit to come. Again, not intent to accuse anyone. I don't have anyone in mind. But as the Holy Spirit has been convicting me, I realize that our ultimate judgment comes not from man or how we appear, but really we are all accountable before God. And I would be a fool to say that our property and possessions and how we handle that before him doesn't matter, because I really am convicted that it does. And so what I want us to do in these next few minutes is to really spend some time before God. I'm going to ask Elliot to come up and to just really kind of give us some space and time to just really reflect in God's presence around these issues and ask God what it is. And if God is giving you a clean slate, then no one is condemning you. Really want us to really be honest before God, you know, and how I want us to dismiss ourselves is when we have spent that time with God, that you would silently dismiss yourself and go to the back of the room. I want to also point out that we have a ministry team today. Kitty and her team will be up in the front if any of you want to pray with the team. About this or about anything else, whether it be about healing, whether it be about anything else that is really troubling you today. I just want to create this sacred space for this time between you and God. And so let me just pray for us. So dear God, these are really your words, God, and your principles. And I just can't help when I read these words to just say that, God, this is important. And I confess that we, just as a people, not only in this church, but here in the United States, I suspect, and not only suspect, but I know that we do not view our possessions in this light. I confess that I view the possessions as my own, or what you have given me for my use or my safety or my family's protection, without thinking about your kingdom. And so, God, I just ask, God, that you would usher in a spirit of generosity here. There's not a specific ask or anything, but really just that we would be in alignment with how you want us to view what you have given us in the time that you have given us here on this earth. God, we confess that we have stolen from you, that we have robbed you. And so, God, whatever you need to speak to us today, would you do that in your gentle, gentle, kind, and gracious way? Would you be gentle in your touch and just speak to us lovingly, Lord? And if there's no condemnation, God, we do not, you know, we're not trying, we know that your word is not of condemnation, but actually one of freedom. And so, God, as we contemplate that, we see that the path that you have set before us is one of freedom and not of accusations and not of bondage and not of guilt, you know, because that is not the God that you are. But you are a God of freedom. And so, God, would we just see that you want to set us free, free to see that everything is yours and that you have given that to us, and that as freely as we have received, that freely we may give, and freely you will receive back to us, give back to us, and freely we may give, and that we would just be conduits of really what it is that you want to usher out here on this earth. Thank you, Jesus.